Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. I'm your host, Tyler Fornes. With me, as always, is Fred Moreland. Fred, how are you?
I'm doing great, man. Let's talk some college football 26, the most important wrestling subject. I am trying to do an Akron dynasty, and it appears I have made a poor choice, but I finally won my first game after my third try, and immediately the brand exposure for Akron drops to an F. My top three recruits are all no longer interested in me. I have no idea what happened.
It's probably a play style thing.
Brutal.
Like, if you think about it, if you are a run heavy team and you throw a shit ton, and that guy's just like, no, I want to be in a power eye pound the rock. Like, I even had it where my number one receiver wanted to transfer when I was playing for Texas State. And I threw the ball a ton, but it was because of how I threw the ball and the fact that I ran a lot still. Like, he didn't like the style of play, so he almost transferred. Like, that can make a humongous difference, something that you don't necessarily think about.
I guess. I thought that was a separate thing, though. Like, that brand exposure was separate from like play style. I thought that was a different thing, but
brand exposure. Oh,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know.
Akron fucking sucks. So yeah, that's probably the reason.
Well, I get that, but I don't know why we dropped from a D to an F like after a win. I don't know.
Yeah, I got nothing there, but I haven't bought 26 yet. I am going to get it at some point. Yeah, maybe this raise at work will finally convince me to get it.
Hey, maybe.
I know. Fred, I do think, I want to thank everybody who ended up watching our instant reaction or listened to it after the fact. It would have been nice to be able to have a little bit more time to kind of dive into stuff because the two of us did not expect the show to go until 8 p.m. Central.
Yeah, that was not what I thought would happen.
Mrs. Porno was not happy. When she's like, yeah, go ahead. You should do the show. It'll be fun. she thought, oh, we'll have dinner, we'll be able to hang out, because the next day she flew to Yellowstone.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was not happy with me. She's like, 9 hours for wrestling? Are you kidding me? Yeah. And I think that's a really interesting place to start here, Fred, because so much of the discussion about the show has been the length. I feel like I'm on a little bit of an island. I did think the show went long. I even mentioned to my buddy who was over watching the show with me, like, it show's already been 4 hours and we're not even at the triple main event yet. Like, it's finally getting to that point. And I'm thinking, like, oh, people are going to have a big issue with how long the show is. But the weird thing is, other than, like, holy crap, it's already gone this long and we still have a lot left. I never felt like the show was long, if that makes sense. Like, watching the matches, I never felt like, okay, this is getting way too much time. The men's gauntlet, yeah, a little bit. But it's also weird that, like, the Royal Rumble specifically says, like, hey, entrance every 90 seconds. Well, with the gauntlet, they specifically say at random intervals, where it's depending on however they built the match. So it could come quicker, it could come shorter. And I like that because it keeps that ambiguity where you go based on how the match is going versus having a structured time. And I like that. But 35 minutes was too long, I guess. I don't know. Maybe I was just riding high for the vibes, like I mentioned to you pre-show. Like, it never felt to me like the show was super long in real time until you looked at the clock and realized, holy crap, this has gone a long time. And I do find it interesting that it's been kind of the lead topic of conversation. I think it should be discussed. I think it should be a talking point because, one, it was the longest show in AEW history. Two, it was the longest pay-per-view in American professional wrestling history. And three, I do think that they went in an extra hour because they wanted to counter-program Saturday night's main event, which, okay.
Yeah.
I also really don't have an issue with it being super long because I was fully engaged the entire time. It was a very good show that, honestly, I'll be real, could have had better wrestling for what AEW has been conditioning us to provide with pay-per-views on a regular basis. I feel like I'm alone in the fact that it didn't feel super long while I was watching the show. And I find that aspect very interesting because I know Joe and Rich, the flagship, they each solo reviewed the show for their Patreon. And I listened to both of them. Both of them didn't watch live. And both of them clicked on the file and saw that it was 6 hours without the pre-show. And they're like, oh, no.
Yeah, I think that's like, a tough thing to see.
It is. I'll give them credit, though. They have always buried super long shows.
Yeah.
So
obviously is not like some anti-AEW nonsense going on with those two. Now, I think that I was about ready to get to the point that the length of the show was going to piss me off. And then we got to the triple main events and I kind of bailed it out. I'm not going to rip on anyone for thinking the show went too long. I mean, it was objectively a long ass show. Let's not pretend it wasn't. I am glad that I did not sit through the first hour of the pre-show for whatever talking head nonsense they were going to do. But there were several times during the show that I was like, this could have been shorter. The men's gauntlet in particular didn't need to go over half an hour. That should have been like 18 or so. Drop a couple of those things that, you know, drop a couple of participants would have been fine. I think the women's also went a few minutes too long and also was really badly affected by Perfectly Legal Cole nonsense. And then on top of that, I thought that they really botched the booking of the TNT Championship match until the finish. That match shouldn't have gone that long, especially right after the Adam Cole promo. I thought that in particular was kind of brutal.
So that's kind of a weird one, Fred, because when I was watching the match, they had to find a way to get Fletcher out of the decision. And I think the only way to really justify that in kayfabe with how dominant he's been and how they're trying to really build him up against those three guys was to go a little bit longer and to really wear him out with a lot of the offense. Because we're not talking about him in the ring with a lot of established like superstars. Where he's in the ring with Daniel Garcia, who everybody thinks has loads of potential, but has never really reached it. Sammy Guevara, who might be the most polarizing wrestler in the entire company. And Dustin Rhodes, who is 56 years old. I might be a year or two off, but he's in his mid-50s. So I guess looking at it, I don't really have an issue because they were able to get enough offense in on him as a collective unit to get him out of there. So in my brain, it's kind of a justified decision, but I also kind of agree that maybe you can trim a couple minutes off of it. I do think they nailed the landing.
They did.
Dustin Rhodes gets the win and they get the big moment. I thought it was really smart to not crown Kyle Fletcher, because when he squashes the fuck out of Dustin Rhodes, that's going to rip. And it's going to make him a bigger deal than if he just would have won a mismatch four-way put together, which in hindsight was a really smart move. Now, it's still weird that they had them do double duty, but you got a Kevin Von Erich five-way Iron Claw in Texas in a stadium.
No, that was perfectly fine for the pre-show,
And Dustin Rhodes did nothing in that pre-show match other than like an Iron Claw. So it wasn't like he was worn out.
I think he's walking around worn out, but remember that Elimination Chamber years ago where John Cena was eliminated like 2 minutes in after taking everyone's finisher?
Oh, man. Yeah, I do.
That's what they could have done with Kyle Fletcher. Not right at the open, like have him have a little run, have him dominate the first few minutes of the match, then have all the baby faces like get their big moves in, take him out of the match, and then have like a 5 minute sprint to the finish, you know, and you could have saved yourself 5 to 8 minutes that way. And I think that would have just been a lot better. I think if you had taken him out in that manner, in that spot, it would have popped the crowd and maybe brought them back a little sooner. I don't know. Because what brought them back was the triple shattered dreams to him in the corner. You know, that obviously could have been part of it. Part of the you know, taking him out part of the match. But no, I just think that match went way too long. I think that may have been the most egregious one. Because the crowd wasn't just like dead, but they were bummed. Mm-hmm. And I can't blame them. Speaking of Adam Cole real quick, just to update the story. The reporting has come out from both Sean Ross Sapp, I believe, and Brian Alvarez that it is a concussion that he suffered, I think, last Thursday. And is why he was so emotional, because he has had several of them and it's extremely frustrating and career threatening for him, I believe. I will say that, I get like not just rolling him out or whatever, you know, let me rephrase that. I get not scripting what he was going to say or whatever, cause you wanted to be like, let him have an actual emotional moment with the fans and all that. But I think if I'm walking away from that promo thinking, does he have cancer or some other terrible disease? I think maybe, you know, it didn't exactly, I think they made it like too serious. And I hate saying that, but you know, not that a concussion is not serious, let's be clear, but I thought it was like life threatening when he was walking backstage and not career threatening. That may have just been me. But I think that was part of the issue, is it just really came across like, is Adam Cole dying? and not, is Adam Cole going to be able to wrestle again? Cause those are, you know, this may not be fair, but that's kind of the vibe I got off the crowd, is that their reaction was far more super concerned, you know, like
And one thing to remember is the crowd didn't know.
Yeah.
Unless they were super online and they watched or they were scrolling Twitter or they had the pre-show on their phone, they had no clue. They didn't announce it live.
Did they not announce it to the crowd at any point?
No. Mm. So Adam Cole comes out, and I think that was one of the big reasons why it was so deflating, was they didn't know. So, like, and the ambiguity of that actual moment where you don't really know what's going on, you just know he's not competing and he has to surrender the TNT title.
Yeah.
Like, hell, my brain kind of went to what you did, Fred. Like, does this dude have, like, cancer or something? Like, it was very ominous.
Super and
you
ominous.
You can just tell that he's distraught. And the fact that they announced it so late. Look, concussions are a weird, weird thing. We think of them as, like, especially with how exposed we are, like, in the world of football, pretty straightforward. But they're not.
No,
it's not like a hairline fracture in an arm where they're all pretty much the same.
Yeah.
They're all different. Sidney Crosby had a lot of post-concussion syndromes, and he missed almost an entire year because something was wrong with a muscle in his neck from I think, whiplash when he got hit. They're weird. They're wonky. And it with the brain, once you do damage to it, it's irreversible. So there's so many different layers. And concussion symptoms can appear 24 to 48 hours later. So if that hit that was going around, that just simple lariat that he took where he did the flippy-do gimmick, which, by the way, I hate the flippy-do selling a lariat. I hate it. I don't think it's natural. Every once in a while, I think it works. Like, you know what would have been awesome? If somebody took a flippy-do on JBL's clothesline from hell. I think that would rule. Like,
somebody had to have at some point, but
maybe like 2004 Rey Mysterio. Because if that exists, I want to see it because I think that would be really, really cool. It would feel more natural than a simple lariat sending a guy into a flippy-do. That's just me. But the most simple, like, moves in wrestling can get you just as injured. A simple lariat. What was it? Triple H tore his quad tendon running the ropes. Vince McMahon tore both of them rolling into the ring.
Yeah, like, simultaneously.
It's wrestling. Stuff happens. And I feel so bad for the human Adam Cole. I really do. And I hope whatever happens with him moving forward ends up being a positive and he ends up living a very happy life, whether that be he is able to get back in the ring safely or he never wrestles again. Whatever that ends up being, I hope he ends up at peace and can continue to have a positive life. But
yeah, man, I wish nothing but the best for him. It's been a tough couple of years for his health.
It really has.
I mean, I don't think you could really call him injury prone because, you know, I there is concern about the repeated concussions over his career, but I think the broken foot.
That's the most unlucky thing of all time.
That's just dumb luck. Like, that's just something super random happened to you, essentially. Like, the random number generator came up on you that day. And it sucks. So I don't know if he returns to the ring regardless. I wish him obviously nothing but the best for his health and happiness. And I think that's I'm far from the only person to say that. He is obviously very well liked by his peers, by the fans. I saw a lot of posts from across the spectrum about just how Adam Cole is fantastic. So and he also gave us what I will always love, which is the fantastic little comic of, oh, Kirby, won't you ever get full, as the AEW locker room is just in a cartoonish cloud of dust as they brawl. But going back to the length of show conversation, I think you could have scraped off half an hour, maybe, if you're shortening those three matches I talked about. But I don't think that's really going to change, like, the conversation surrounding the length of the show if it goes 7.5 instead of 8. You know?
Yeah. I consider the show 7 hours because the first hour of the pre-show doesn't have any wrestling. You have 7 hours of wrestling.
Yeah.
I watched the first hour of the pre-show because I was just getting ready. I was making smoked Italian beef, which ruled, by the way. And I was just hanging out with my dogs, doing a little bit of work while I was waiting. And I will say, the drive along segment with Renee Paquette and John Moxley is one of the best things I saw all weekend. Phenomenal stuff. It's impressive enough that you can play a wrestling character in Persona, but to do that with your husband and to play it off like he's just a wrestler and you're not necessarily talking to your husband, but you're talking to him from a kayfabe perspective, I thought was brilliant. And I think both of them deserve a lot of flowers for that performance. If you didn't know that they were married and had a kid together, I don't know if you would have really been able to tell from that interview. And I think that was tremendous. But 7 hours of wrestling is a lot. It's a big ask for people. And I do think if you were to have trimmed things down here and there, you can get it to 5 or 5.5. And I will say, there have been a lot of people talking about the crowd not being super hot. I'm going to be real. I thought they were, and I just thought it was shittily mic'd.
I think the production did a good job of picking up the big sounds, but not the like in-between sounds. I think I talked about that after the show last Saturday.
I've got a sound system in my truck, and I've had subs in my vehicles for the better part of 15, 20 years. I just love them. And one thing that you really need to dial in is that mid-range sound. And I think, like you said, AEW just didn't do a good job of it.
Yeah. Yeah, but, what are you going to do?
I think there were a lot of really good things and a lot of things that they can still learn because stadium shows are still new to AEW. They have not been able to completely dial in everything. I think they learned a bunch from All In One to All In Two. They learned a bunch from All In Two to All In Three. And I think they will continue to learn as they grow and develop how they want to present their stadium shows, how they need to do some of the technical elements with just basic miking. I will say, and I wrote about this for Voices of Wrestling, one of my few articles, because I technically have a non-compete with A to Z Sports. Man, I think we should go back and talk about the main event.
Sure.
Fucking phenomenal production. Incredible. I think one thing that I've seen grow, especially over the last like 3 months, is the willingness to just use a single camera shot. And I noticed it heavily in the Will Ospreay, Hangman Page, Owen Hart Memorial Tournament final match, where there were some instances where they would have that low camera shot in between the first and second rope. And they would just do like a series of spots through like 20 seconds and they wouldn't cut. And they would just keep it going. And we've been so conditioned with this Kevin Dunn version of professional wrestling where things continue to be just camera cut after camera cut. Like the Swerve Strickland Hangman Page cage match where there was the chair shot to end it. They intentionally cut at that point so you didn't see it, but you knew what happened. That's like Kevin Dunn's version of pro wrestling. The second, like, Shawn Michaels had Sweet Chin Music, the second that boo was supposed to hit the chin, he cut, and he changed camera shots. Like, that, it's almost like you're trying to hide the violence, which is just weird. And I think AEW is trying to find their own rhythm still with how they want their house style to be on a consistent basis. But the long camera shots, the lack of camera cuts, the fork spot where you have the one camera shot and Moxie's in the triangle and Hangman Page is gouging his forehead with a fork and the blood is bursting at the seams, I thought was amazing because you know it's violent. You know it's going to be violent, but you're not hiding it. You're just like, hey, here it is. and you're not treating your audience like a baby. You're not treating them like they're stupid. You're just allowing these moments to breathe and allowing these moments to grow in an organic fashion. And I think that's been such a breath of fresh air, Fred, over the course of this company, because it's good to just allow your audience to see what they already know they're getting. And some of these longer camera shots, they had one in that super insane series of spots with the Bucks and Ospreay and Swerve, where they're delivering a bunch of like super kicks and house calls, and then they get that double Canadian destroyer hype up spot where Ospreay delivers a front facing hidden blade and Swerve gets the house call. Like, that was all that same camera shot I talked about in between the ropes, just letting everything come to you. And I thought that's what made the main event so brilliant, because everything just came to you. It wasn't a bunch of things for dramatic effect. It let the drama breathe in the ring. And to me, that was probably my biggest takeaway from the entire show, was they're starting to find their way with production, and they're starting to do it in a way that keeps them separate from other companies, and it allows their product to grow, breathe, and shine. And I think it's great.
Yeah. I do think that they've improved things on that end, and it helps the product out to not feel like it's just we stole the WWE production playbook. And I think they've done a better job. There's a period, I think, right around the peak of the Bridge Hot Show era where it felt like that they had just like, oh, we can't be doing what we were doing because that's wrong somehow. But it feels like they have shifted back from that. And it's for the better, I think, pretty clearly. Just a superior, just for the vibes, frankly, more than anything. There's just, if you're going to be the alternative, you have to feel like a alternative. And I think that they're doing a better job of doing that.
Yeah, I agree. It's been really nice because production has been a really, really difficult part of what this promotion has been. It's been incredibly inconsistent over the course of the entirety of the promotion. And them finally figuring things out from their own perspective and how they want to handle it, I think it's just been such a beacon of light and been so nice that there feels like a direction with this show, and feels like they know what they want and they're still trying to find things here and there. But the most important thing is they're letting things breathe in the ring. And the last thing I want to talk about with production is I thought the finish of that match was just so, 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 so good. The Moxley and Hangman match. One, John Moxley might be like probably a top five wrestler in the world right now. He was the reason that match was so good, in my opinion. Two, I loved that production waited to hit Hangman's music. There's always been this, the second the match is over, the music hits. No, they waited about 8 seconds. They let the moment breathe. They let the pop speak for itself. And then they hit the music. And I thought that subtle touch was a great, great job in figuring things out and letting the moment really sink in for everybody and not trying to take it away and transition to something else, which is what the music would have been. Like, they still played it. It was still relatively quick, but I thought they nailed it.
Yeah, I agree. That was a very nice touch. And I feel like the presentation, that match was pretty damn good, all things considered. I think JR, I think, had some rough spots when he came out to announce. You know, considering the status of his health, I'm not going to spend time getting mad about it. I do think that they, you know, it took them a little bit, but they did figure out that the best way to use him was occasionally. And they're doing that. And it's always good to see Jim Ross. I mean, just because he's Jim fucking Ross. So, I don't know. You got anything else to say on the show in general?
No, I thought it was a massive success. I think if AEW is going to continue to counter program, they need to book something good. And Evolution was forced, even though apparently the Io Sky Rhea Ripley match before the cash was phenomenal. I haven't had an opportunity to watch it, but I think I'm going to try and make some time.
Yeah, that's getting pretty universal praise.
Saturday night's main event opened with Jelly Roll and Logan Paul. And let me tell you, there is nothing that I want more in my pro wrestling than Jelly Roll.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean that completely sarcastically. I have zero interest in watching Jelly Roll do anything. It feels like he's faking it. And it doesn't feel like authentic at all. It feels like I have no interest. Logan Paul is probably the best celebrity wrestler of all time.
Pretty much, yeah.
He rocks. And if he were ever to come to AEW, I'd be so enthralled with some of the matches he could have. But yeah, I have a lot of interest in watching Logan Paul. Jelly Roll, no. Like, people were let's talk about this, Fred. People were comparing him to the Rizzler. And let me tell you, the Rizzler, Big Justice, and Big Boom AJ, who is a trained pro wrestler.
Yes, his spots are
good. They have psychology behind them. He knows how to sell. He knows how to work. Look, is he a good pro wrestler? But he knows how to be a pro wrestler. His promos are like old school. Like, they are actually promoting the show that he's going to be on. And you know what? It's just meant for fun on the pre-show. The Rizzler didn't even do anything this time around. The coolest thing the Rizzler did was there was a 15-second social media clip where Tomohiro Ishii put the cowboy hat on him. And he looks
cowboy
at him like
Rizzler.
Like he's Mean Joe Green. Like, and then he's just like, the chin thing.
Does the chin
like,
thing, yeah.
Oh, by the way, Big Justice is only 11. Did you know that?
That is ridiculous, because he is a large son.
Like, I mean...
You could have told me 16 and I would have believed it, you know? I mean, he looks young in the face, but like... Yeah, I would have thought high school, you know, late middle school.
When you and I were growing up, the word husky meant you were just a fat kid. But the actual definition of the term is that's just a big kid. Like, if...
Yeah, no, he's...
In actual definition,
if he keeps growing,
Justice is a husky kid. That dude is a beast. And I mean that in a positive way. Like, that spear he delivered, like, get him wrestling training right now. And by the time he's 18, he might be pretty good. Like,
put him in there with the Sons of Sting and whatever, the nephews of Dustin Rhodes, I guess, is the relationship. Is that right?
Yeah. Unironically, Big Justice's spear is one of the better in professional wrestling.
Maybe Adam Copeland could take lessons from him.
I've always hated Cope's spear. I always thought
it was... Yeah, one other... Yeah. He could never settle on a finisher, like 8 of them in his career. One other note from the show is that Siori, who debuted and instantly looked like basically the best worker in the women's gauntlet, is gone. She is getting elbow surgery, so grand opening, grand closing. Hope she recovers well and everything. But
I am very excited about Alex Windsor. I had never seen Alex Windsor.
Oh, she looked good. Yeah. No hate on Windsor.
I have a take for you, Fred, that I got from the Women's Gauntlet that I want to run by you.
Okay, all right.
I want the TBS title to become a Haas belt.
Because okay.
The first three entrants of the Gauntlet were all, like, you could consider them like women's Haas wrestlers. Chris Statlander, Megan Bain, Willow Nightingale, all powerhouses. Those were some of the best spots in the match where they're just, like, throwing bombs and, like... Like what the old Never title used to be, where it's just about throwing bombs and physicality. I kind of want that for the TBS title. And I think you have a relatively deep enough roster to kind of make it a really like physical vibes title. Like Queen Aminata can throw bombs. She's not nearly the size of the other three. She's very tall, but she's relatively slender in frame. Tekla is a physical beast. I really enjoyed Tekla and had no idea what to expect because I'd never seen her in Stardom, but I've really enjoyed her in-ring work. I think she's a very good hand right now, and maybe there's potential to grow into more. Like, I think it would be really cool to have that in comparison to the women's world title, because for a long time, there really wasn't a big distinction between the TBS and the world title. And now I think that would be a good path to go down, especially if Willow's going to end up being the one to take it from Mercedes Moné, which has always felt like the direction. And then you could just make that a Haas belt and just throw bombs consistently. I think that would rule.
I think it'd be best just to keep it as like, you know, an unofficial thing when you've got the right people, you know, in there. But I also think I could easily be talked into a deathmatch division, essentially. So, you know, not exactly far away from it. Yeah, I mean, I'm very interested to see what they do with it going forward. They seem to be pairing up Tekla with Sky Blue and Julia Hart. I'm still annoyed by the whole, like, perfectly legal aspect of the women's gauntlet match, but
the gauntlet match is having so much interference sucked. I hated it.
The women's one in particular was egregious. Like, there were some in the men's, but it was basically just, oh, the Gates of Agony are involved. Oh no, the guns have returned to chase them off. And that was about it. So that was okay. I do think AEW overdoes the interference stuff, which leads me to my next complaint, which is, can we please never ever again do the ref is counting three. Oh no, I physically prevented them from doing so it doesn't count spot. Like, oh, it's God. Just the worst.
How, in from a kayfabe perspective, do you allow these people to get away with it and not punish them? They're pulling a referee. They're no, like,
just come up with, like, better spots, you know? I mean,
in the NFL, if you touch a referee, you're tossed.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry.
Bobby Heenan didn't die for this.
No, you can't. I agree. The ref pulling spots, the amount of interference in the gauntlet matches, they need to die right now.
Yeah. I think that's about majority of the news. I think Dave may have said something about, like, the pay-per-view doing really well. One of the best in company history.
He said it was above last year's All In, and I believe he also alluded to it being fourth among AEW pay-per-views of all time. If it was above last year's All In, the buy rate was estimated to be between 167,000 and 173,000. Okay. So above 173,000 feels like a fair statement at this point, and above 173,000 is a big win.
Yeah.
We're starting to inch back closer to the CM Punk debut at All Out 2021, which I was at that show live, and it was awesome. That was one of the best vibe shows of all time. And the wrestling on there was really good too. But if they can ever surpass that, I think it would be a huge feather in Tony Khan's cap, especially after everything that's happened since Punk came into the company 4 years ago.
Yeah, I think they're on their way. They just need to keep doing this. It was very interesting, I thought, on his Tony Khan's interview with Voices of Wrestling contributor Case Lowe, his radio show, to talk about how he thinks that part of the issue is that he was taking, that Khan, to be clear, was taking too much feedback from other people, and wasn't just like driving his vision primarily. And when he got back to that, he associates that with the improvement in the show, which hopefully means that we don't do that again. That we don't have the thing where, like, in, I don't know, 6, 12, 18 months or whatever, he starts like, oh, well, I don't want to make anyone angry. I better start, you know, spreading out the booking again. Like, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Can't make him fool me three times. So hopefully that persists. I'm going to let that go into something I want to talk about from Dynamite, which is the contracts for the Casino Gauntlet matches may or may not be cashing contracts. And we were supposed to, Tony Khan in the post show presser and everything was saying, oh, well, we'll get clarification on TV on the exact, you know, how these will be implemented. And we kind of really didn't fully get that kind of, get full clarification, I would say, because my takeaway from both the MJF and Athena promos is that they both indicated I could cash this in, I'm just not going to. And is that how you took those two promos? And is that like your takeaway?
So I'm actually pulling up the quote. Friend of the show, Trevor Dame, does a great job of
Trevor rules.
Yeah, he's great. Okay. So this is the quote from the end of the presser. Tony says he'll be, sorry, it's not a quote, but this is what he ended up going down. Tony says he'll be making those title shot announcements, quote, very soon. And thanks to media, his fatal mistake. A staffer says they're having a party for them after this. And Trevor also says, make them eat trash out of cans until they improve. That was absolutely hilarious. But I took that as these are going to be assigned matches, but they're going to be assigned when Tony Khan says they will be. I don't think that these are going to be cash-ins because I think the cash-in gimmick sucks. I think that's why like people complaining about it. Like, Tony's more online than anybody. He gets it. He knows the score. I don't think that they're going to have these cash-ins. I think they're probably going to be like all out or Wrestle Dream matches.
Yeah, I think that's what it's going to be. But I think they left the door open, not just for possibly shifting strategy this year, but for the future, which is unfortunate. I just like them to say, hey, we're not doing the cash in thing ever again, obviously, because neither of us like it. It's a really lazy crutch. And I think American wrestling has too many like really dumb crutches like that, and the pulling the ref out that I already ranted about, that I wish AEW would get away from. Like, yeah, you can have interference in matches, but like, let it make sense. You know, have the ref be distracted or the ref be down. You know, like, show some level of care for it. Don't just be like, hey, I saw one a couple weeks ago. I think it was in NXT, and if it wasn't an NXT, it was spiritually an NXT, if you catch what I'm saying. But there was a match where, like, it was a multi-man singles match, and one guy had a second guy down for a pinfall, and the ref goes one, the ref goes two, and then the third guy comes in, doesn't break up the pinfall, just grabs the ref's hand. And it's like, what the hell? Like, can we just not do this? But the cash-in, is it like, why would you logically, as a promoter, hand out the Money in the Bank briefcase thing? Like, why would you not do the Dario Cueto thing? I mean, Lucha Underground figured this out like a decade ago. that, you know, you could have Tony Khan or Tony Khan's, you know, intermediate be like, we want to make money, so we want to promote the match. Just terrified that we're going to go back to that. I think that was arguably the biggest news coming out of the show. I think we got a lot of continuation of feuds that I wouldn't have been surprised if they're blown off, primarily Paige and Moxley, but that's still going to go, I assume, for Blood and Guts. We're continuing Briscoe and MJF, which is good. I thought that their build to the Casino Gauntlet match is very good, and I thought the work they did together in the Gauntlet was quite good, so I'm excited to see that progress. And we got Tony Storm, Athena being teased. I really like whenever they're in these buildings with balconies, AEW, Tony Storm always uses it to cut a cool looking promo. And she did it once again. I liked her promo. I liked how they shot it on Dynamite. And I thought that was really good. And I thought the matches on this week's Dynamite were all like, very good-ish, you know, not great, nothing I'd put to like a 4-star level, nothing in the notebook area, but I thought that Fletcher Mascara Dorado was pretty good. It was obviously heavily towards Fletcher to keep him over, help him get some heat back, and I thought both multi-man tags were fun, but nothing in there that I'd like say, hey, if you got to watch a match this week, you got to check out blah, blah, blah. Like, nothing approaching that level.
So, I actually thought the Fletcher-Dorada match was a 4-star match.
Really?
I thought Dorada, like, he wasn't sloppy, but he wasn't smooth either. It felt kind of rough, and to me, it felt rough in ways where it felt a little bit more real. Even though he was doing a bunch of these flippy doos, like he wouldn't land super smooth. He would land and like shuffle the feet real quick. And like, I really enjoyed it. I saw people complaining about how Fletcher was allowing so much offense to this small guy. I'm like, it's Dorada.
Like, yeah. Dorada is very good. That's part of the deal, man.
And it's like a size versus speed kind of thing. I thought it worked really well. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. I think it's good to have a guy like Dorada on TV semi often, especially as you try to continue to build this relationship with CMLL, especially because I think personally Forbidden Door is basically going to be an AEW versus CMLL show with some Stardom and New Japan talent. I don't think this is going to be a New Japan heavy show personally, but we'll see. We've got about 5 weeks until the show to build up a lot of different things, but the G1 starts on Saturday.
And yes,
that could make things a little difficult. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was fun. It was different because Dorada is a different type of high flyer than we have in AEW. He does a lot of like really cool things. So having that showcase, I thought was really good. Like, I really enjoyed it. I also thought the women's four-way for 100K was pretty good.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I thought it was good, yeah.
I really liked the structure. Like, oh, we're going to put, like, and this is where you can expose any grifting fraud. The all-star tag and this four-way.
Oh, yeah.
They have no stories.
Why are they doing the match on the wrestling show where they wrestle?
Well, you also had Willow and Statlander have been feuding on and off for a couple of years. You had Tekla and Aminata, and then they just ended up like splitting off and doing their own stuff within the context of the match. Like, you're advancing storylines and just having like, oh, go wrestle for 100 grand, like a prize fight. I thought that ruled.
Yeah, no, I like that a lot.
The frankly. All-star tag was great too, because you had a bunch of storylines advanced there, and Brody King gets pinned. Bandito gets pinned by Hechicero, and now there's even more credence to him getting an ROH title match. Like,
yes,
wrestling is simple.
Yeah, it's not that hard. I mean, like, and the silliest part of it is like, I never put on a NBA game, and I never shout to myself, why? God, why are the Hornets and Spurs playing? Now, I mean, I shout at myself, why am I watching this particular game? But, you know, like with no Wimby on the court or something. But, like, it's because they're basketball teams and they play basketball. You know, like, why is the six-man tag happening? It's because they're wrestlers and they want to get a win. God, like, that's it, man. We don't have to be spilling coffee on people backstage, for God's sake. Jesus. I swear to God, like, just, you know, I wrote that article a week ago now, and it's, you know, about how people have to make up the dumbest human beings to ever possibly exist as they're like, oh, please make wrestling appeal to these people. And it's just, no, we don't have to. It's not even that hard. I'm not, like, rolling to the opera to watch Wagner or whatever and going, ah, this is all an old Germanic. I don't understand this shit. And getting mad, you know? It's two dudes in their underwear pretending to hurt each other. How much do you need? Christ.
I need Michael Cole and Corey Graves to hit me over the head with the story every single week in order for me to understand it, Fred. That's the thing. There's so much about AEW storytelling that it's just simple. It's not rocket science. It's staring you right in the face. And people just cannot understand it. And it's just mind-boggling to me that that's the case. Very frustrating. But,
you know, I'm not asking for, like, you know, the plot of Chinatown in the ring or something, you know, where there's a bunch of twists and turns because no one's ever actually booked a wrestling mystery correctly. But, like, I don't know, man. It's so dumb. Just we live in this dumb planet with dumb people saying dumb shit.
Yeah.
And then other dumb people come along like, oh, you're so right. Ugh. I also pretended to really dumb person and we need to appeal to them specifically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, anything else you want to talk about from Dynamite? Because I, you know, it was kind of a, hey, we just did an awesome show, so we're going to just put some wrestling out here and do a couple promos, just, you know, show you, remind you which direction we're going moving forward.
I do want to know what the direction is with the Death Riders and Hangman. This match on Dynamite kind of signals that this isn't over.
No, it's not. Definitely not.
I really am intrigued to kind of see how this evolves. It feels like this is a blood and guts kind of feud. But I don't know. The direction here is going to be really, really interesting to me from a short and long-term perspective. And I want to see how that grows and develops. But I did think it was interesting to have them wrestle 4 days later on the show. I found that really,
really, yeah, I thought that was interesting too. I mean, obviously they want to keep it going, you know, the Death Riders versus Babyfaces thing. I could have pushed that back a week, you know, just to hype it up some, probably. That's what I would have done, I think. But I get it. I mean, you haven't completely blown off that feud, so you want to keep it going, and that is a pretty damn clear way to keep it going, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting to kind of see how things progress and move forward. Before we go, though, Fred, one of the funniest things I've ever seen in professional wrestling happened on Dynamite on Wednesday. The Bucks entrance, they get no pyro, and then the video behind.
Oh, that was a good bit. Yeah, that was a good bit.
It just so good. I loved it.
I you know, if I didn't think it was just kind of a one-off joke, or just part of the deal, I would wonder if that's a little way to tease Orange Cassidy coming back. Now, I assume it is not, you know. Because he would team with Orange Cassidy at this point. They haven't really set that up, but and his beef would not be with the Bucks. It would be with, you know, the Death Riders and Moxley. But yeah, I you know, it was a great gag. It was good comedy and I enjoyed it.
Yeah. And the last thing from Dynamite that we need to talk about, Fred, is we're getting a Swerve and Okada program. And
yeah,
I'm all for it. They've only been in the ring together 3 times in their careers. All of them have happened in the past calendar year. The first match was a year ago today as we're recording this on the episode 250 of Dynamite that ended in a disqualification. Then they were both in the Blood and Guts match, but they didn't really touch much. And then Okada and Ricochet defeated Brody King and Swerve Strickland in a tag match. On Dynamite, I think 283. I don't have it pulled up right now, but I'm very intrigued by it. It also sounds like Ospreay's going to be getting some time off to heal just some generic ass injuries. He's just a little beat up, which it's Will Ospreay. No surprise. That man is just crazy. And I mean that in a very respectful way. He's Will Ospreay. Yeah. But yeah, I like the direction of where things are going. I think they delivered a good show. Everybody wants a Raw after WrestleMania. Like, no, they delivered a good show that it clearly advanced a lot of storylines and set directions for a lot of people. And I think it was very successful. Plus, the venue looked awesome. What a tremendous looking venue.
Yeah, it looks cool as hell. So it'll be a fun couple weeks there.
Mm-hmm. All right. That is the show, Fred.
Yep. Thanks everyone for listening.
You took the words right out of my mouth, literally. Yep, thanks, everyone, for listening. Give us a 5-star review. We'll be back next week to talk more about this very intriguing company as we move into Forbidden Door. Thank you. Have yourself a great day. God bless. Take care.
Take care, everyone.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-star match game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.
Love Japanese pro wrestling? Want coverage of the entire scene? Men's and women's promotions from New Japan to Stardom, NOAH, All Japan, DDT, Marigold, and more? Then Wrestling Omakase is the podcast for you. Hosted by a 23-year Puro Watching veteran, that's me, John Carroll, and a rotating cast of co-hosts, we bring you a passionate, knowledgeable look at the wide world of Japanese wrestling. Wrestling Omakase is right here on the Voices of Wrestling Network. Check us out on any podcast app or feed today.